Tin Aleph, Perek Tetzvav. We start from the beginning of Perek Tetzvav. Again, I'm going to trouble you through what I troubled you last week. We have a very brief little description here in Sefer Malachim of the reign of Aviam, the son of Rechavam, and we're going to want to see some elaboration on that again in Divrei Hayamim, as we did last week. So let's see. We begin Perek Tetzvav. Ubishnash Moina Israel Amelas Yeravam Ben Nevat. On the 18th year to the reign of Yeravam Ben Nevat, Molach Aviam Al Yehuda. Aviam, the son of Rechavam, took the throne over Yehuda. Shalosh Shanim Molach Yerushalayim. He reigned for all of 3 years in Yerushalayim. V'shem Imoy Ma'achol Bas Avishalom. And the name of his mother was Ma'achol, the daughter of Absalom. If the name Absalom sounds familiar to you, yes, that is, the Mepharshim say that it's that Absalom. And this woman was not known for her piety, as we'll see as we go along. Was there what? Presumably not. Why? So I must confess, the Mepharshim talk about that. I didn't pay due attention. But if you look in the Radak, I believe you will find that he addresses it. If I remember correctly, the Rabbat also.
There's any significance to it now. But here, this isn't the last time it happens.
See here.
These timelines. The new king of Judah against the years of the tribe as opposed to his own father.
Oh, they sometimes do it in both directions, just to give you reference. Okay, so now, Vayelech b'kolchatos aviv asher asa lefano. He followed in all the sinful ways of his father who preceded him. Lo'ihaya lebavo sholem im Hashem elokav, and his heart was not in the right place with Hashem. Kilvav David aviv, as his ancestor David had been. So I'm again reminding us all of what we discussed last week, that the criticisms of the kings of Yehuda have to be taken in perspective. The when you see it, you know, you have your Ravam and then you have Aviam, and it says that none of them was so great. You kind of get the picture that they were all the same. But as we showed last week, there was actually an immense difference between the kings of Yehuda, the blamed kings of Yehuda. Later we'll get to some really bad ones. Yehuda also had a couple of really bad ones. But in general, the kings of Yehuda that came under criticism, in general, such as Rechavam and Aviam, it was a whole different caliber than the kings of Yehuda. For example, the Darius HaRishonim and the Malbim also makes this inference. If you remember, how does the Pasuk word his evil? He was not as wholehearted with Hashem like his ancestor David was. If you remember, that was the basis for Chazal to say when the Pasuk said that about Shlomo, it said Shlomo worshipped idolatry, and he wasn't as wholehearted with Hashem like his father David. Chazal say, the Pasuk is already hinting to you that he did not really serve idolatry. Because if you have a true idolater, we're not going to say, you know how bad he was? He was not as great as David. Halavai, that would be the criticism on me. Right? That's all you have to say about me, that I wasn't as great as David. It puts me in a pretty good place. So Chazal, that is for Chazal's indication that it wasn't literal. And here we have the same thing said about Aviam. So once again, neither Aviam nor Rechavam were busy worshipping idols, and we'll see this even clearer as we go along soon and refer to Divrei Hayamim. But what? They did not live up to the very high sterling standards that Hashem expected of the people of Yehuda. Even more specifically, they did not do what it took to eradicate whatever sproutings of Avodah Zarah there was in the royal house. We discussed, 16, that since Shlomo's time, there are already certain sprouting of Avodah Zarah among the many wives of Shlomo had remained, and these kings did not go about energetically eradicating them. He didn't see David HaMelech. And as we'll see soon, there were other kings of Yehud that didn't get this criticism, even though they were not David HaMelech. Why? Because at the end of the day, we're talking about a person giving it his all. Meaning, we'll see soon, there's a level of keeping your nose clean. Rechavam and Avihu did that. Okay? They both, they kept the Torah, they expected the people to follow the Torah, but Hashem was expecting performance on a very high level of dedication. Now, if a person would have done that to a satisfactory degree, he wouldn't have got the criticism that he wasn't like David. Might not have made him like David. But this criticism, that he wasn't quite like David, implies a lack of active dedication. That's what the Malbim also says. The Malbim says, he was not a bad person. He was not a bad person. But he wasn't as great as David in the sense that David, by David there was no such thing as, okay, these things already exist, I don't have the oomph to go change it, right? There are problematic realities. David was not satisfied with the fact that there was any foreign presence in Eretz Yisrael. This was a reality that already existed for centuries before him. No, he was going to bring it to the most optimal, absolute, ideal state. And any king who strove for less than that was criticized with this. The fact that, you know, he operated okay within the existing reality did not meet the grade of what Hashem expected of the kings of Yehuda. So now we move on. Kilman David, Natan Hashem Alekovzoi near Birushalayim. Hashem was disappointed with the performance of these kings. But Hashem left this as it was. For the sake of David, Hashem granted him that continuation in Yerushalayim. Vahakim is Bnei Acharav. This is what he granted David, that he would keep his progeny on the throne, Ulahamid is Yerushalayim, and keep Yerushalayim as Lamaisa, the capital of Cairo. Asher also David is Hayosha Beine Hashem, because David had fully done what was right in the eyes of Hashem. He never strayed from anything that Hashem commanded him all throughout his life. With the exception of, we know, the story of Uriah Hittite. Okay. Now, Umilchama Haisa Bein Rechavam Ubein Yerovam Kol Yemechayim. Now, give an interesting description of the reign of Avihu. You know, the reign of Avihu was characterized by that there was war between Rechavam and Yerovam all throughout Avihu's life. In other words, what we're saying is Avihu basically continued the reality that he was born into. The strife between Rechavam and Yerovam continued with him, just that he actually did a better job at it than Rechavam did. Rechavam kind of epitomized, it kind of symbolized the king who lacked the ability, call it the backbone or whatever it is, to actually go really fight the battle. Avihu did a better job at that, as we'll see. What's that? Oh, that was right away when they first went out to war to go reconquer Kaseres Shvatim. They were told to turn back, but then afterwards we were told that Lamaisa there were wars between him and Yerovam for the rest of his life. That's at Rechavam. We'll see momentarily that Avihu apparently did a better job at this than Rechavam. We'll see momentarily. But here, Malachim keeps it short. Yes, and Divrei Avihu, all the rest of the affairs of Avihu, the Kol Asher Asa and everything that he did, Halayim Ksuvim Al Sefer Divrei Hayomim L'Malkei Yehuda. They are recorded in the Sfarim of Divrei Hayomim for the kings of Yehuda. U'Milchama Haisa Bein Avihu U'Bein Yerovam. And yes, there were also battles going on between Avihu and Yerovam. So the pasuk here tells us the elaboration is in the chronicles of Malkei Yehuda, which in this case can very well be referring to Divrei Hayomim. So I want to take a look in Divrei Hayomim so we get again a little bit more of an elaboration of those wars between Avihu and Yerovam, and also once again a perspective I keep expecting you to believe me when I say that the kings of Yehuda still is a different caliber. In Tevarei Yamim we see it spelled out very clearly. So I want to see Tevarei Yamim again. So the parallel here. So anybody who wants to take yourself a Tevarei Yamim, it'll be Tevarei Yamim Beis, Perek Yud Gimel. You want the English one? Beis, Perek Yud Gimel. Tevarei Yamim Beis, Perek Yud Gimel. No, I have it here. Okay. Okay. Perek Yud Gimel. So we're going to start from Pasuk Gimel. We're also here in the first Pesukim, it describes, yes, in the 18th year of Yerovam, Abia took the throne. He was the king for 3 years, and there was war between him and Yerovam. So we start with Pasuk Gimel, okay? Yeah. What? What's with the name of the mother? Reb Noach is noting that here in Tevarei Yamim he gives a different name for his mother. If you want, the simple mahalach of the Mefarshim is that, yes, it was a slightly different name. It's possible that she went by different names, and her father did too. There are Sfarim that get more into the depth of it, that there were different elements to who she was. But I'm not going to focus on that now. So Pasuk Gimel. So we saw that there was battles between Abiyam and Yoavim, right? Vayesu Abiyah es ha-milchama b'chayil gibayil milchama. So Abiyah set up the war against Yerovam with an army of mighty warriors, 400,000 selected warriors. The Yerovam orach imay milchama, and Yerovam came to war against him. Listen to the matchup. Yavim is coming with 400,000 selected warriors. Yerovam is coming with exactly double that amount, 800,000 selected warriors. So some of the mafarshim. It said Gibor Chayil about both of them. The Lashon is a little different. Gibor Chayil versus B'chayil Gibor Milchama. There are Mefarshim who say that yes, not only did Yerovam have greater numbers, he also had greater warriors. I mean, he was greater in quantity and in quality, as implied in the fact that Tachlis like Rabbi Zivya said by Avdeinu, it just says Gibor Milchama, warriors of Milchama, whereas by Yerovam it says Gibor Chayil, valiant warriors. I don't know exactly what the difference would be, but whatever the case is, we certainly have the quantity. That's explicit. 800,000 versus 400,000. Abiyam is not intimidated. Abiyam is not intimidated. Vayakam Abiyam me'al lahar Tzmarayim. Abiyam got up on the high mountain, Har Tzmarayim, asher b'har Ephraim. Now note, the battle is going on in Har Ephraim, which means that Abiyam is on the offensive. Okay, right? Ephraim is the 10 tribes. Right? Yerovam is Ephraim. So Abiyam is on the offensive here with the smaller army. Vayena. And he says, Shema'uni Yerovam b'kol Yisrael. Hear me out, Yerovam in all of Yisrael. Halei lachem lo das. Now here, listen to this speech given by a person who's described as bad, who you just look at the simple Pesukim and Malachim, seems to be equated with Yerovam. But listen to this speech, okay? Halei lachem lo das. Don't you all realize ki Hashem Elokei Yisrael nosam amlocha leDavid? And Hashem, the God of Yisrael, granted the kingship to David al Yisrael la'olam, over Klal Yisrael forever. Loi ulavan of Gris Melach. This was given to David and to his seed as a covenant of salt, meaning as a preserved covenant. It's something salt is symbolizes preserved, permanent, right? Vayakam Yerovam ben Nevat. And here came along Yerovam ben Nevat, Eved Shlomo ben David, a servant of Shlomo ben David, Vayimroid al Adonav, and he rebelled against his master. Now the truth is, okay, I should know, this is not yet the pious part of his speech. This is still, if you will, something of an alma mater. Okay, his team, what do you call it? What's that? No, I think I have a team song, a team jingle. Okay, this is what you might call, this is not yet the pious part. Whatever it is, he's coming and expressing the superiority of the Malchus David. Now he comes and says something somewhat chutzpah. He says, Yerovam ben Nevat got up and had the chutzpah to just rebel against his master Shlomo. And who joined him? Empty people. Good for nothing. And they prevailed over Rechavam ben Shlomo. Rechavam was a kid and weak of spirit. He didn't really have the guts to stand up against him. So, kind of like he was childlike in his lack of courage. So the truth is, this part of the speech is not yet what I should have been emphasizing. This part of the speech was actually viewed as something of a failure on his part, because there were a number of problematic elements in this part of the speech. First of all, as a member of the House of David, he is completely not recognizing the legitimacy of Yerovam's rebellion. Now, we have to remember that, yes, Yerovam today is Yerovam ben Nevat, right? As we know him, the traitor of Klal Yisrael, right? But Yerovam, when he took the throne, it was by the word of Achiah Shelemi. Achiah Shelemi was no empty person, and this was not just the case of a good-for-nothing getting up and rebelling against his king, right? Yerovam was not a criminal initially when he rebelled against Shlomo. He was following another. So that's number one. And the way he just completely disparaged everyone who followed Yerovam is held against him. That's number one. Number two, Rav Moshe Dov Izhari points out that the way he expressed himself about his father was also quite inappropriate. The way he expressed himself about his father was also quite inappropriate. We remember, we already discussed this. Rechavam was 41 at the time. The Pasuk calls him a Na'ar. The Pasuk calls him a kid because his behavior was somewhat childlike, but that's not something for his son to come and say. That's not something for his son to come and say. So this, we can point to this as an example. The Moshe Dov Izhari points to this as an example of the lack of perfection that Hashem would have expected in the king of Yehuda. Hashem would have expected in the king of Yehuda, okay, you're having friction with the 10 tribes, that's to be expected, that's this reality. But you have to keep mindful of the fact that, no, the 10 tribes were not founded by just, you know, like any other rebel. It was founded as a message to the base David. Are you ignoring that? Are you forgetting that? It was founded as a message to the base David, right? As a warning to base David, and it was through the word of Achiah Shelemi. Achiah Shelemi is the word of Hashem. So here we see that Aviam, with the piety that follows, he's not expressing himself, again, with the care, with the reverence with which we found David operating the whole time, the twisting of eights in order not to show any lack of reverence to his enemies when he realizes that, no, Lamaisa and this, they are right. I have to keep myself in perspective. But now look at the continuation, and this puts into perspective Yehuda versus Yisrael, notwithstanding the criticisms of the kings of Yehuda at this point. Then he continues and he says, V'ata, atem oimim lizchazek lifnei mamlechet Hashem. You now are thinking that you'll be able to overcome the kingdom of Hashem v'yad bnei David, the kingdom of Hashem in the hands of the children of David. V'atem hamayim rav. Now he is confidently expressing absolute faith, an absolute lack of fear at the fact that he's facing an army twice his size. He says, Shteyach Chaboisai, you are a very great multitude. But you already get yourself in the first place, because for all your 800,000, you've got another ally with an enemy that's much stronger than him. Halayhi dachtem. Now he continues and accuses them. He says, Halayhi dachtem is chayane Hashem is bnei Aaron v'alavi. You folks, look what you've done. Created a cult. You have gotten rid of the kohanim of Hashem, the sons of Aaron, the Levim. And you established priests the same way any other nation does. How's that? Apparently, that was the way it worked. You had to pay a certain entrance fee if you wanted to become a priest. Apparently, this was popular practice in the nations around, and this was adopted in Yeravam's cult as well. You wanted to become a priest, you paid an entrance fee. What was the entrance fee? You bought one bull and seven rams as a sacrifice to these Agolim, and that gives you the right to serve as a priest for a non-god. He's completely disparaging Yeravam and his cult. This is something to note, by the way. This is just an interesting point to note, that he's also like making fun of the fact that Yeravam, even in the cult that you did create, you're not even being original, right? The entrance fee is basically based on that what it takes to become a Kohen is basically just cut and pasted from the other nations around. But this is something to note, because this is how it works. The concept of a virgin birth, for example, we think of that as a very Christian concept. It isn't. Right? That also was cut and pasted from the nations around. In those days, every self-respecting Roman emperor declared himself a god. And one of the main qualifications of being a god was being born from a virgin. So most Roman emperors who were gods were born from virgins. It wasn't an original idea. It was old stuff. Okay, so now he says, "Vanachnu Hashem Elokim." Avion says, "What about us? As far as we're concerned, Hashem is our God. Lo yazavnuhu. We never forsook him. The Kohanim is shosim Hashem, and the priests that we have serving Hashem, Bnei Aaron, are the sons of Aaron, Valvim b'melaches, and we have." The Levian doing their avodah that it was designated for them, the song, the gatekeeping. Hey guys, does this sound familiar to you? There's a concept called a Talmud every morning, right? Remember this? When you were once Jewish, right? Uba erev va erev. We have the oilis every morning, every meeting, evening. Yeah, unadulterated, the way it always was, right? Of Teresamim, remember those things? Teresamim u'ma'areches lechem. You have the Teresamim, this will burn up every afternoon. The lechem apanim, done every week. Ala shulchan atohar, which is on the pure table. He's trying to reawaken in them the memories of the real thing, of the real thing. Okay? U'minayah chazor v'neiroseho. And the golden menorah, along with all of its candles, revaer ba'erev ba'erev, which is kindled every evening. Why is he getting into all these details? We have to understand. The Mefarshim says also something that brings out Avraham is not the good for nothing that you get the impression of. He was not just trying to taunt his enemy. He's trying to inspire in them that old connection. That's why he's going into all these details. The Mefarshim say this. He was trying to prevent the war. He was trying to inspire them to, remember the real thing. Remember the real thing. We still have this. Come back. Come back. And you'll be able to be a part of this too. This is what's going on here. Okay? Kishomrim anachnu es mishmeres Hashem Elokeinu. Because we are still safeguarding the job of Hashem our God. V'atem azavtem oisah. While you have forsaken him. Now note another thing he says. Look even at this battle. There are two completely different systems at work here. Yes, you're like any other nation. You came with a very great multitude. 800,000 select warriors. But look what we have. As we said before, you have your golden calves helping you out, and that's what I'm banking on. Keep them right there, right? But we have Ne'imanu Barosh Ha'elohim LeKoyhanu. Who's leading us into battle? It's God and His Koyhanim. I have the Koyhanim, right? You know the halachas of the Koyhanim leading the people into battle. Another thing, remember this concept from the past? The trumpets of war, just exactly as the Torah described. You, the people of Israel, are fighting against the army of Hashem as exactly described in the Torah. Look, you're coming up, doesn't this scare you? That you're coming up against the whole process as described in the Torah going into warfare? It doesn't scare you that you're seeing the other side, the enemy, going through all the halachas that Hashem dictated in order to win a war? Hashem guarantees victory in battle? Now, think of it. We're going to be using these trumpets to blow against you, right? This doesn't scare you? Don't fight Hashem, the God of your forefathers. Might not be your God, but He's the God of your fathers, right? Because you're not going to be successful. The Yerobam, there's no response. The Yerobam, he saved some Arab Lavoy Me'achareya. Meanwhile, as Aviram is giving this impassioned speech, which this was really the point of why I wanted to go through Dibur HaYomim, I wanted to give this, to go through this speech of Aviram, first of all, just to give more of a perspective on who the man was, right? And therefore to put the criticism of him into better perspective. This characterizes not just Aviram himself, but we're seeing a description of the reality of Malchus Yehuda at times when they're already starting to be accused of Avodah Zarah as well. Okay? Now look at the continuation also. Meanwhile, Yerobam arranged, while Aviram is talking, Yerobam set up an attacking force from the rear. Right? The two armies are facing off against each other, and Yerobam has an attacking force from the rear. By Yulifnei Yehuda, so you had the main army facing off against Yehuda, Yerobam and his army, Va'amarav Me'achareim, and you have the other force attacking them by surprise from the rear. By Yifnei Yehuda, the son of Yehuda realized that really he didn't expect me. Yerobam, the strategic guy, while Aviram is still, that didn't even think that the battle was starting then. While Aviram is still in the middle of his speech, Yerobam is already arranging for the attack to begin. By Yitzhu Yehuda, suddenly Yehuda woke up, right, and turned around. And they're facing battle on both sides, from the front and from the rear. So they cried out to Hashem, this is Yehuda doing battle. They cry out to Hashem, right? And the Kohanim began blowing on the trumpets. Vayoriu ish Yehuda. So the people of Yehuda blew on their trumpets. Vayhi vayoriu ish Yehuda. As they blew on the trumpets, exactly the way Hashem operates, Hashem went into action. And Hashem smote Yerobam and all of Israel before Abiyah and Yehuda. This is Mamish, the classic profile of the righteous battle being fought by the Am Hashem. This is who Yehuda was. And the people of Israel began fleeing before Yehuda. And Hashem delivered the people of Israel, the 10 tribes, into their hands. And Aviah and his nation smote them a very, very great blow. And from, what's that? And from among the ranks of Israel, there fell 500, of the 800,000 they started with, 500,000 were killed. What's that?
Again?
They started off at 800,000, the 10 tribes, and 500,000 were killed. Vayikanu b'nei Yisrael b'esahi, and the 10 tribes, the people of Israel, were subdued at that time. Vayamtsu b'nei Yehuda, and the b'nei Yehuda were strengthened. Ki nishanu al Hashem elokei avosam. This is not be talking, right? Because they had leaned with all their weight on Hashem. They weren't frightened. They went into it with full faith. They went into it as dictated by the Torah. And Abia pursued Yerovam. And he captured some cities from him. Look how significant. Beis El, right? The capital of Yerovam's temple. Captured Beis El and the surrounding areas. Beth Yishana, Beth Menaisel, Beth Ephloin, Chayin Ubenaisel. Captured these three cities and the surrounding areas. And Aviah basically smote Yerovam a mortal blow in terms of having it together, in terms of being on top of things. Yerovam was never able to regain his former strength in the days of Aviah. Hashem smote him and he died. I don't know. Maybe they were just all in the same area, so he just took those three together. I don't know. Now I just want to note, it says that Yerovam. Okay, so again, we see that Aviam was granted this decisive victory over Yerovam. It wasn't just that he won a battle, right? It was that he basically rendered Yerovam helpless for the rest of his reign. Now, it says, now Hashem smote him and he died. What this really means is, actually, Yerovam died after Abiyah. He only reigned for 3 years. He died shortly afterwards. Yerovam lived long. Yerovam survived Abiyah. But, the idea is that from this point on, Yerovam never regained control, never regained his places, and from that point on, his health was just deteriorating. After he was a broken man after this battle, Abiyah completely struck him down to the dust. Even though Abiyah died before him, this was the end of Yerovam's high point. And on the contrary, after this battle with with Yerovam, Abiyah just became stronger, his prestige grew. He married 14 wives. He had 22 sons, 16 daughters. And okay, and here's where the story of Aviah ends in these two psukim. Here we join back up with Malachim. The rest of the affairs of Aviah are recorded in the accounts of Ibrahim HaNavi. He died and they buried him, and Asa, his son, took the throne afterwards. Asa's reign brings things back to a higher place. Again, let's remember, Aviam, with what we just saw described here, is still relatively a lower place in the history of Yehuda. This was a king and a period that came under greater criticism. And Asa is going to bring it to a higher place. But we just saw that low period described, once again, in order to have the right perspective of the Malchus of Yehuda, both throughout versus the Malchus of Israel.
It hasn't been that many years since Hashem, I think it was the prophet.
What's that?